everyone. I hope you're all doing so well and welcome back to the Criminal Makeup Podcast. Each episode, we dive into the minds of some of the worst criminals in history. And today we are going to be talking about the case of John and Lorena Bobbitt. So today's case is about a woman who became so enraged at her husband who was abusing her for years. He was also having affairs left, right and center. And in order to punish him, she took a knife, went to their bedroom and severed a certain part that nobody would want cut off. And this case blew up in the media. It was front page news. The trial was televised. Everyone was talking about it. And a lot of the media coverage just made it one big joke. Men all over the country were told to keep their legs crossed. And whilst you may know this case, because this case is kind of seen as a big joke, I bet you don't know the full story behind it, because behind all of the manhood jokes is a very serious case of domestic abuse. And of course, there is nothing funny about that at all. And whilst there have been some great documentaries in more recent times that dive into the full story, whilst I was doing my research, I came across a book that no one seems to talk about, which was written by an author alongside John Bobbitt himself. And the author manages to get John to give a full and frank confession of his years-long campaign of brutal abuse that led up to the infamous incident. And I will just say this now, but John Bobbitt is disturbing and disgustingly honest in this book. And he really does make my skin crawl. But then after this book was published, no one seemed to talk about it. And John still carries on denying all of the abuse. So that is the case that we are going to be talking about today. The true story of John and Lorena Bobbitt and that very infamous incident. So let's get into it. So we're going to start with John's background because, spoiler, he is the main perpetrator in today's case, even though Lorena did the Yeah, John is the main person, okay? So John Wayne, that is actually his name, John Wayne Bobbitt was born on the 23rd of March 1967, making him an Aries. He grew up in the outskirts of Niagara Falls, where he lived with his parents and his two brothers. John did not have an easy childhood at all. His dad was a raging alcoholic and abusive. He would lash out at his wife and his young sons. And John's mom, because of all of the abuse, she just couldn't take it and she had multiple mental breakdowns and she turned to substances herself to cope with everything. The family were also incredibly poor. They would sometimes struggle to even put food on the table and John and his brothers would sometimes go days without actually eating anything. John himself has said that they grew up in quite a rough neighborhood and the family would be victims of violent crimes because of the neighborhood that they were in. But there was one incident where John's mother was sexually assaulted in front of the house in broad daylight. And she was just doing the gardening, you know, she just got pounced on in the middle of the day. People were walking past as the sexual assault was going on and no one intervened, no one said anything, no one reported anything. And then after the sexual assault, John's mom came running into the house. She was crying and she was covered in blood and she came into the house and she said, "They raped me, they raped me." And John was only 3 years old when this happened, but he has said himself that he can remember this day like it was yesterday. Now, it's said that John's dad never looked at his wife the same after she was sexually assaulted, which is honestly disgusting. And John's dad eventually did walk out on the family. And this resulted in John's mom just spiraling even more, really suffering with her mental health, turning to substances even more. And it got to a point where she just couldn't look after her children anymore. So John and his brothers went to live with their aunt and uncle and their cousins. Now, once John and his brothers were living with their aunt and uncle, things actually started to look up for the children because the children were fed properly, they had clothes, they were clean, they had a safe environment temporarily, but they had a safe, stable environment. However, unfortunately, that wouldn't last for very long because an extremely traumatic thing happened in John's childhood. And I am going to give a warning here. We are going to discuss child sexual abuse. I'm not going to go into too much detail. So this happened when an older relative actually came and stayed with their aunt and uncle, because that is the thing about John's aunt and uncle. They kind of just took in everyone. So a lot of extended relatives would come and stay with their aunt and uncle. And this older man came and stayed with the family. And on this one time that he stayed with the family, he sexually assaulted John. And John was only 5 years old when this happened. And then this older relative started to stay at the house more often. And every single time he stayed at the house, he sexually assaulted John in the worst ways imaginable. But then he also started to abuse John's brothers and cousins that were in that house. So he is abusing multiple children every single time that he stays. It's just truly just makes your skin crawl, but it gets worse because this older man, he started abusing the children in front of one another. So he would literally gather all the children in one room and sexually assault them one by one and make the other children watch for his own sexual gratification. Now, eventually, the older man did confess to John's uncle what he was doing, and rightfully so, he was banned from the house. He was never allowed to come back. However, no legal action was taken, but at least he was out of their lives, thank God. And after he left, this is when John did start to get his life a little bit on track. He focused on school, he focused on his friends, he started to actually focus on being a child, and there's nothing really to report in his school life. We just know that he excelled in sports and he did graduate, but then when he graduated at the age of 18, he didn't really know what to do with his life. And this is when he decided to join the US Marines. And he excelled. He seemed to just adapt to this lifestyle very easily, very quickly. And he was a bit of an idiot, I'm not gonna lie, but he was doing well for himself. He wasn't doing too badly. He didn't seem like he was that much of a monster at this point in his life. And then he turns 21 years old, and this is when he met Lorena. And everything from here really does just go downhill and changes everything. So now we're going to talk about Lorena. So Lorena was born on the 31st of October 1969, making her a Scorpio. She was born in the town of Bacay in Ecuador. And then when she was 5 years old, the family decided to relocate to Venezuela. Now Lorena had pretty much the complete opposite childhood to John. She had a very loving, very supportive family. Now, she was raised in a very deeply religious Catholic family, and this definitely does play into a little bit of Lorena's story and how she like thinks and acts. But when Lorena was growing up, she had one dream, and that was to live in the United States of America. She wanted the American dream. She grew up watching programs like Days of Our Lives, The Price is Right, The Brady Bunch, and she just was watching these TV shows thinking, I want to live there. I want the American dream. I want that experience. And by the time Lorena turned 15 years old, this is when she visited the US for the very first time, and she fell in love. So after graduating high school back in Venezuela, she applied for a student visa to go to college in the US. And this is what happened. She started attending community college in Virginia. She was living with various friends of the family and like different family members. And Lorena was really just living her dream. Like this was her dream. She excelled in her studies. She was making friends. She got a part-time job as a nanny and a manicurist. And then in September of 1988, Lorena got invited to a local dancing event at the US Marine Base in Quantico, Virginia. And who else was at this event? Well, it was John Bobbitt, and this is how they met. And this was a pretty chance encounter for the two of them, because what are the chances that they would both be at this event? And when John first saw Lorena, it was pretty much love at first sight. There was just that instant spark between the two of them. They immediately hit it off. They exchanged numbers and they pretty much straight away started dating. However, there was one problem. Lorena came from a very strict Catholic family, and Lorena's family did not believe in sex before marriage. They believed in marriage for life. You don't get divorced. And this also meant that whenever Lorena and John would go out on a date, they would always be chaperoned, which definitely made the dating process a little bit more awkward and difficult, but they still seem to manage to find a way around these chaperones, etc. Just jumping in here with a sponsor for my US listeners, and that is Stamps.com. So 2024 is already well underway. The excitement of the new year has worn off. But if you're a business owner, you'll know that it's time to find your groove and keep things moving. So now is a great time to level up your small business and set the rest of your year up for success. And you can do that by using Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you print your own postage and shipping labels right from your home or office. It's ready to go in minutes, so you can get back to running your business sooner. You can get access to all of the UPS and USPS services that you need right from your computer any time of day. And you can also arrange for your parcels to be collected from you. Plus, Stamps.com can save you a ton of money. It automatically tells you what your cheapest and fastest shipping options are, and you can save up to 89% off of your usual shipping rates. So if you're a business owner of any size, keep your mailing and shipping moving at the speed of your business with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code CRIMINALMAKEUP for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code CRIMINALMAKEUP. And they both were just madly in love with one another. Like, it really does just seem like it was one of those rom-com romances where they did just meet and they weren't supposed to meet. It was just a chance encounter, and they're soulmates and they love each other, and they're sneaking around behind the chaperone's back. And then 10 months after they start dating, John gets down on one knee. Well, I actually don't know if he did get down on one knee, but John proposes. And Lorena just thought, oh my God, she felt so lucky. She found the man of her dreams. And everything was just perfect in her life. The two of them got married, and that is pretty much where the fairy tale ends. The couple, after marriage, moved into a small one-bedroom apartment in Manassas, Virginia, and they didn't have a lot of money. They spent literally all of their money on this apartment. They couldn't even afford furniture, and this, it definitely caused tension between the couple, so they started bickering very early on, and the bickering then turned into arguments, which turned into like fights, and it would just blow out of proportion. And they just always seemed to be at each other's throats over the smallest thing. They would always just be arguing. They would scream insults at one another. They were really horrible to one another. They would each blame the other for their current financial situation. However, financial troubles were not the only problem early on in the marriage. Oh no. Because literally only weeks after the couple got married, John went behind Lorena's back and invited his cousin Todd to live with them. Now, Todd is John's cousin, but because they grew up together, he sometimes refers to Todd as his brother. Now, Todd was a drug addict, and John promised to help him get back on his feet, help him get clean, be a supportive older brother to Todd, you know? And Todd, on top of all of this, is not a good person. He was narcissistic. He was lazy. He actually had no intention of getting clean off drugs. So he was using all the time. He was also drug dealing on the side. He didn't respect Lorena, even though that is her home that he's living in. But not just that, Todd was a very bad influence on John, because as we know, Todd is taking a lot of drugs. Well, John felt like
He had to keep up.
John started to try and emulate Todd's stupid behaviour. The two of them would go out to nightclubs all of the time. John would just be irresponsible. He would drink way too much. I'm not sure if he was taking drugs. Possibly he was. But he also started disrespecting Lorena. He started throwing insults at Lorena because he thought he would look cool in front of Todd. He was one of those people. And this resulted in John and Lorena arguing even more. John was drunk every single day just to avoid his problems, which only led to more arguments, and the environment was becoming so toxic and volatile. And ultimately, this is what would lead to terrible consequences. Because one evening, the three of them actually did go out together. So John, Todd, and Lorena are out at a nightclub, and John, being the complete idiot that he is, decided to drive home completely drunk. Now, Lorena, she didn't want to get in the car. She was protesting the whole way home because he was drunk. He was driving all over the place. He was putting so many people in danger. And because Lorena kept saying things like, slow down, stop, pull over. And obviously she was saying it in a more shouty way. She was being a little bit more aggressive than that, but still warranted. But in response to this, John literally just turned and punched her in the face. And Todd was sat in the back and he was just laughing his head off the whole time because he thought that this was hilarious. Now, when they got home, Lorena went crazy at John for punching her. She started screaming insults at him, saying how much of a terrible person he was. And in response to this, John ran over to her and slapped her so hard that she fell to the floor. And then John kicked her in the stomach as hard as he could. John was actually about to carry on the attack further. He wanted to do more harm than that. However, he heard a security officer walk past and knock on the door because they heard the commotion inside. So thank God for that security officer. Otherwise, God knows what would have happened to Lorena in that moment. But the security officer, after they knocked on the door, John composed himself after the attack on his wife, answered the door to the officer. The officer said, is everything okay in here? I heard some very loud screams and shouts. And John acted all cool and charming and managed to talk his way out of this. And the security officer never even saw Lorena. And that's the thing with John. He's very charismatic. He really, really is. But that's the thing with narcissists, because he is a narcissist. I am not just using that word. Narcissists, they normally are charming, aren't they? They normally can worm their way out of things. Following that attack, Lorena actually slept the whole night in her car because she was so scared. Because even though this relationship was very toxic and volatile and they were always arguing, this was the very first time that John was physically abusive to her. And she didn't know what her husband was capable of, so she slept in her car the whole night and she prayed and she hoped that it was just a one-off, that he would never do it again. So the next morning she did return to John. However, sadly, she would be wrong. This was not a one-off. So following this first incident of domestic abuse, the abuse just got worse. And John, in his own words, has said that because he got away with that first time, he felt empowered to do it again. John was now abusive to Lorena on a regular basis. So they were arguing almost daily before this. Well, those arguments, they were still happening. However, now the arguments would always end in John beating Lorena up in some kind of way. Sometimes he would hit her to the ground. Sometimes he would kick her in the stomach. He would slap her. He would bash her head off things. And sometimes Lorena did give it back. She sometimes would slap him. She would punch him. She would kick him, which is not okay. Like, abuse in any way is not okay. But it really is different. Lorena is just reacting to the abuse that she is under. And the biggest difference was that John always had to have the last say. He would always hurt her more. He would always end in Lorena having a black eye, a busted lip, bruises on her arms, on her neck. And eventually Todd did move out, and Lorena was really hoping that the abuse would stop. Lorena always hoped that the abuse would stop. If this happened, the abuse will stop. If that will happen, the abuse will stop. However, there is no excuse. There is no excuse for violence, for abuse. There is nothing that would have made John stop. John abusing Lorena was not because of his cousin living there or because of alcohol. It was a conscious decision. It was a choice. So after Todd moved out, the abuse actually got worse. And it was a very similar situation. Every single time they argued, it would always end up in Lorena being beaten up in some kind of way. But the beatings would always be worse, if you know what I mean. He would punch harder, he would kick harder, he would strangle her harder. He actually liked to do this certain thing where he would wrap both of his hands around her neck and he would dig his two thumbs into the base part of your neck to cause maximum damage. And oh my God, even just doing that now, oh my God, I couldn't even imagine how painful that would have been. And the abuse, it started to happen in public as well. Like, it wasn't just behind closed doors. It's crazy that people just didn't really seem to care. And I know that's obviously a generalization. I know there were people out there that did care. Lorena was now constantly covered in bruises, and she would wear a lot of heavy makeup to try and disguise the bruises. She would wear long sleeve tops to cover all the bruises on her arm. She would wear like turtleneck tops and stuff to cover the bruises on her neck. However, people did start to notice. Her colleagues started to notice all of the bruises all over her. But when anyone would ask her, "What is going on? Is your husband doing that to you?" Lorena would just brush them off and she would say, "Oh no, it's not as bad as it looks. I'm fine." She didn't want to badmouth her husband in front of anyone. And this really is where Lorena's upbringing, her very religious upbringing, plays into this, because she was almost embarrassed. Because in her mind, she thought admitting to the abuse, she would be admitting to a failed marriage. So things just stayed the same. And then it got to spring of 1990 and Lorena fell pregnant. Now, Lorena, she was actually over the moon about this because it was her dream. She wanted a family. She wanted to start a family. And she thought as well, this will hopefully make John stop. However, that was not the case. It was actually the complete opposite. John was furious that she was pregnant. He blamed Lorena for getting pregnant, even though it takes two to tango. He was very verbally abusive to her. And then he grabbed a phone book, got a number for an abortion clinic, and told Lorena that she was having an abortion, that she had no choice in the matter. And Lorena pleaded so much. She didn't want an abortion. She wanted this child. She wanted a family. But John didn't care. And he drove her himself to the abortion clinic. And the whole drive, he was taunting her, saying how painful the abortion was going to be. And then he forced her into that clinic and made her get an abortion. And following this, Lorena fell into a deep depression. This was one step too far. John had really pushed her over the edge this time. And Lorena just tried to stay away from him. She didn't want anything to do with him. I mean, she still lived with him, but she tried to avoid him as best as she could. But John expected and wanted sex all of the time. He thought that he was owed sex. He thought that because Lorena had married him, that gave him the right to have sex with her whenever he wanted. And because Lorena was really struggling after the forced abortion, she understandably didn't want to have sex with John. And because she refused sex, this infuriated John. And there was one time where Lorena refused sex with John and John just completely lost it. He saw red and he beat up Lorena. But this time the beating was slightly different because John realized that he became sexually aroused by beating up Lorena. And this is when John started to think to himself, well, I'm a man. I have the power to do whatever I want in this relationship. He also became so angry at Lorena that he wanted to shame her. And this is very sadly when John rapes Lorena for the first time. The abuse just keeps escalating. It really does. He has emotionally abused her, physically abused her, and now he is sexually abusing her. And after this, Lorena just felt completely violated. She was so traumatized. Again, she couldn't believe what her husband was capable of. Now, according to John, and he is not always the most reliable source because he likes to make up excuses for all of his behavior. So I don't know how much I believe this. He has a slightly different story as to how this first rape happened. He doesn't deny that it happened. I just want to point that out. So according to John, Lorena called him a very offensive homophobic slur. And this brought John right back to his childhood when he was sexually abused, because the person that sexually abused John also used to call him that homophobic slur when he was being sexually assaulted. So because it brought him right back to his childhood, he wanted to make Lorena feel the way he did as a child when he was being sexually assaulted. And I don't know how true that is, but it doesn't matter if it is, because there's no excuse for rape. But after the first rape, John didn't feel any kind of remorse, nothing like that. He actually felt emboldened. He'd gotten away with it. There was never any consequences for John. So now whenever the couple would argue, sometimes they would both get physical with one another, but it would always be John that was the more physical out of the two. And then at the end of the argument, John would always end up raping Lorena. And this would happen multiple times every single week. And it went on like this for years. John would beat and rape Lorena whenever he wanted, multiple times every single week for years. And it was almost like he was just emotionless. He saw Lorena as his property that he could do whatever he wanted. It was also at this point, a few years into the marriage, that John was having multiple affairs. John would sleep with other women constantly behind Lorena's back. So at this point, John is actually working at a nightclub. And in his words, that meant that he got access to easy sex whenever he wanted. And then after he would sleep with another woman at work or wherever he was, he would go home to Lorena in the middle of the night, sexually assault her, rape her. And as he was raping her, he would whisper the names of the other women that he had slept with and exactly what they had done to him and what he had done to them. It's just on another level, the fact that he is raping her anyway, but he is also humiliating her and emotionally torturing her by whispering names in her ear. It's sick. Another really disgusting thing, which really made me so angry, is that John actually had a nickname for Lorena when he raped her. And he said, quote, climbing aboard the Ecuadorian Express. And then to rub more salt into the wound, John would steal money from Lorena's purse to take these other women on dates. I just can't with this man. I really, really can't. Now, at this point, the couple fell into serious debt because John could never hold a job down. At this point, he had been discharged from the Marines. I wonder why. And it was Lorena that was actually the breadwinner of the couple, which definitely caused some tension. And she worked at a nail salon. And Lorena was struggling to earn enough money to keep the household going. She even turned to stealing at one point to get enough money to pay the bills. There was always bailiffs at the door. Their apartment actually got repossessed. And Lorena, at this point, she was at breaking point. However, there was one more incident that completely just pushed her over the edge. Because one weekend, the couple took a trip together. John was driving and the two of them started arguing. But it got very, very heated. And all of a sudden, John pulled the car over to the side of the road, grabbed Lorena's head and smashed it into the window. And he smashed her head into the passenger side window with so much force that she had a cut on her head and it was pouring with blood. She was barely conscious, and John wanted to show Lorena who was boss. So he started choking her, and Lorena was completely defenseless. She spat in his face because that is all she could do. But her spitting in his face actually turned him on. And sadly, this is when John tore off Lorena's underwear and very aggressively raped her in that car. And this particular rape was the most brutal and violent out of all the rapes prior to this. And Lorena was just so humiliated again and violated, and she was crying so much. But the thing is, John has said this himself, he thought that Lorena liked this, that her screaming and crying was actually her egging him on, asking him to do it. Again, this is another one of John's excuses as to why he did all of this. And the years have gone by, and this is a regular thing for Lorena, and she feels completely trapped in this relationship. And up until this point, she hasn't wanted to reach out to anyone to open up, to get help, because she felt embarrassed, even though she should never feel embarrassed about all of this. But that is how she felt. She didn't want anyone to know. But after this incident, she finally got the courage to ask for help. But unbelievably, no one could apparently help her. So she called 911 multiple times to report that her husband was raping her. But because the man raping her was her husband, the police said that there was nothing that they could do. Next, Lorena tried to call the Marines family helpline, but at the time that she phoned this helpline, John was still enlisted, and she spoke to a social worker on the base. They told her that they would look into her case, that they would help her, but all they did was give John a questionnaire to fill out. And on that questionnaire, it asked him how he was treating his wife. Now, why the bloody hell would you hand the abuser a questionnaire to ask them how they are treating their wife? Of course they are going to lie. And there was no follow-up on this. The social worker didn't actually help. Lorena started to open up to her colleagues at work, and they were obviously mortified, and they did support her with whatever she needed. They tried to give her advice, but ultimately there was not really much that her colleagues could do. In fact, John cared so little about people knowing about the abuse that he openly started bragging to his friends about the abuse. John actually said to his friends that he enjoyed, quote, forcible sex with Lorena. There is no such thing as forcible sex. It's rape. He also said to his friends that he liked to see a woman scream and squirm and bleed. Lorena even tried to buy a tape recorder one time to try and record him assaulting her. But before she could, John found the tape recorder. He flushed it down the toilet and proceeded to beat her and rape her. After all of this abuse, after Lorena trying multiple times to get help, after John abusing her in public, John was actually only arrested once. This was after an incident where he had punched Lorena in the face and she had a split lip, and she called 911. And because officers came out and they visibly saw that Lorena had a split lip, they arrested John, took him down to the station. John actually pleaded guilty to assault and battery. However, for some reason, the charges against him were dropped. And you may be thinking, well, why doesn't Lorena leave? However, leaving abusive relationships is not as easy as it sounds. And there were a number of reasons why Lorena didn't leave John. The first and the main one was that she was absolutely terrified of him. John would constantly threaten that he would kill her if she ever left him. There was one time where he threatened to kill her if she ever left him, and he grabbed her by her arms and dangled her over their apartment balcony and threatened to drop her. She was genuinely terrified that he would kill her if she ever left. And unfortunately, the statistics support this. Most women who face domestic abuse are at the highest risk of being murdered by their partner in the breakup process or in the 6 months after they've left their partner. Another reason why Lorena didn't leave John is because of her religion. Whether right or wrong, it was deeply ingrained in her that marriage was for life. You didn't divorce. And the last reason, and I don't know how true this is because I've only heard this from John, I haven't heard this from Lorena, but John has said that Lorena was too scared to leave him in the marriage because her citizenship would be at risk. John said that Lorena would only gain permanent US citizenship if she remained married to him for at least 5 years. And I don't know how true that is. That is just John's words, but John has said that he used this to his advantage. He knew that she wouldn't leave. And now we get to June of 1993. Lorena was now 23 years old and John was 26. The sexual assaults and abuse have been happening pretty much on a daily basis now for 4 years. But after a particularly bad argument, Lorena couldn't take it anymore. And she just said, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. I'm moving out. I can't take this anymore. And I don't know if she actually was planning on leaving or almost just saying that. But John responded, oh, no, you're not. No, you're not. I'm leaving instead. I'm the one that's going to leave. And Lorena started to make plans on leaving. She started speaking to friends and family about this. She picked up some leaflets on domestic violence. And she even went down to the police station to take out a restraining order on her husband because she knew that if she was going to leave him, he would react in a very violent way. But did the police help her? No. They actually made it very difficult for her and they just said, oh, you'll have to come back in a few days. We can't help you right now. They just handed her a load of paperwork. They just really didn't care. There was no sense of urgency. Lorena has multiple times reached out to authorities to to get help. But no matter where she turns, no one can seem to help her, so she feels so trapped. She felt totally helpless. She was on the verge of a full-on breakdown. And then there was one more thing that completely pushed her over the edge. And this is where we now get to probably the most infamous mutilation in US history. So on Tuesday, the 22nd of June, 1993, Lorena headed out to work at the nail salon like she did every single day. Now, as we know, Lorena had threatened to move out, but she can't. She has nowhere to go. She's completely helpless. And then we also know that John, in retaliation, also said that he was moving out. So on this day, Tuesday, the 22nd of June, John had invited one of his good friends, Robert, over to stay the night to help him move out the next day. John and Robert, they go out drinking, which is what John did pretty much every single night. And Lorena, she probably enjoyed the time on her own, you know, she's in the apartment on her own. So then she heads to bed, she has her normal evening routine, and then at about 3 a.m., John and Robert, they return. They're both incredibly drunk. Robert is sleeping on the sofa, and unfortunately, John heads to the bedroom to do what he did pretty much every single time he got back from the club. He saw that Lorena was asleep and he raped her. As Lorena always did, she woke up being raped. She was screaming, she was crying, she was trying to get free, but she couldn't. But John just ignored her and he continued on the assault until he was satisfied, and then he rolled over and fell asleep very quickly. And Lorena was just left lying in the bed, and I think this was breaking point for her. Lorena jumped out of bed and she was crying, and she went to the kitchen to get herself a glass of water. And there was nothing in particular about this attack that was any different from what happened to her most days, but she started to almost just have a complete breakdown. When she was getting her glass of water, it was almost like she was being hit with every single memory of every single assault, attack, rape. She couldn't stop thinking about the pain, the humiliation, the shame. And in that moment, something inside of her just snapped. It was like she was having an out-of-body experience. So Lorena was looking for a glass to make herself the glass of water when she noticed a butcher knife. It was a long, sharp, around 8 inches butcher knife. And this is when Lorena grabbed the butcher's knife, acting on impulse, not really acting with control. And she headed to the bedroom. She stormed into the room and she found John. He was still asleep. He was on his back, completely passed out. He was just lying there without a care in the world. He has gotten away with repeatedly assaulting her physically, emotionally, and sexually on a daily basis for years. And Lorena had had enough. And this is when Lorena ripped the sheets off of John. She held the butcher's knife in the air and brought it down on his penis. Yeah, you heard that right. So if you didn't know what the incident was, this is what I'm talking about. Lorena literally, with one hand, she had the knife. With the other hand, she lifted up John's penis, and with one swipe, she took his penis clean off. She completely severed his penis off, completely. Not one strand was still attached. She took it clean off. And people have later said that it was one of the cleanest cuts they have ever seen. Like, she really did, down to the base, take the whole thing off. Now, following the complete dismemberment, John has said that it felt like a bolt of lightning in his groin area, and he woke up in horrific and intolerable pain, and he just started screaming. At first, he didn't actually know what had happened to him. Lorena actually ran out of the room, and he looked down to his groin area, and it was just seeping blood. And he realized that his penis was no longer there. I'm like, what the hell? Like, I can't even imagine what that would have been like. He must have probably thought at first that he was still completely drunk and he was out of his mind. So going back to Lorena, she has ran out of the room. She is still not in control of her mind. She doesn't know what she's doing. She runs out of the room. She grabs her car keys. She is still holding the butcher's knife and the penis, and she got in her car and drove off with the penis still in hand. She drove full speed down the road. She didn't know where she was going. She was just driving. It was almost like she was on autopilot because she drove to the nail salon where she worked. However, on the way to the nail salon, she stopped at a stop sign, and this was possibly the first moment where she got any clarity of mind. It literally just then started to dawn on her what she had done. And the realization all at once dawned on her that she had literally just cut off her husband's penis and she was still holding it, but she had no memory. How did she get in this car? How did she have this penis in her hand? What the hell is going on? And instinctively, she just threw the penis out the window. I'm not joking there. She flung the penis as far as she could and it landed in a nearby field. She didn't exactly want to be holding on to it any longer, did she? And then she drove to the nail salon, still with the knife in her hand. And then when she eventually got to the nail salon, she dumped the knife in a garbage bin. And it's like, what the actual hell? What the bloody hell? And this is what I mean when I say I can understand how people find this funny, because it's almost like, how is this real? Like a wife cutting off her husband's penis and just the way it all happened and her throwing it out of the window. It's like, I do understand how so many people made a joke out of it. But then, like I said, when you actually know what led up to that situation, it's not funny at all. I mean, cutting off someone's penis is not funny anyway. I'm not saying that, but you know what I mean. But now going back to John in the bedroom, he has realized that his penis has been cut off and he is screaming, and Robert, who is on the sofa, hears the commotion, goes running in to John to see what is going on, and John literally shouts to him, "Lorraine has cut off my dick. You need to take me to hospital." So John had gotten a bed sheet and he placed it over his groin to try and stop the bleeding, and somehow Robert managed to get him in the car and he rushes him to the nearest hospital. And when they got to the hospital, John was actually surprisingly calm for someone that has just had their penis cut off, because you would think that they would be screaming in agony, maybe they would pass out, blah blah blah, but maybe he was in shock, I don't know. So anyway, Robert and John go up to the front desk, and when the person at reception says, "Hi, how can I help you? What's wrong today?" And this is when John said, "My wife has cut my dick off." Again, the person at the desk was like, "I'm sorry, what?" They were totally and utterly shocked, but again, only one look down at his groin, it was bleeding, and they did actually take a look and they were like, "Oh my god, doctor, you kind of need to get here now." And this was around 4 a.m. So the on-call surgeon was woken up from their sleep and told this over the phone. I can't even imagine how that conversation would have gone. And when the surgeon got to the hospital, they inspected John, and yeah, his penis was completely gone. And I'm sure most of you are possibly struggling to even picture what this would have looked like. And I'm not going to put pictures up. Don't worry. I will not scar you like that. I don't think YouTube would like that either. But I will warn you that these photos are readily available online. You can actually go see them, but I would do it with caution because you can never unsee these photos. I have seen them and I am scarred. And the really good documentary series on this case, it's on Amazon Prime. It's called Lorraine. And the photos are in that documentary and they just flash up in your face when you're not expecting it, which is how I saw the images. And oh my God, let me just tell you this. So when I was watching the documentary, I made the stupid decision to sit down and watch it with dinner. I had no one warning me, "Please don't eat when watching this," like I do with you guys. No one warned me. I was eating my dinner and a severed penis flashed up on the screen. Oh my God. And then following that, the wound flashed up. So I've literally seen John, just his testicles with no penis. These images are burned into my brain. So I'm just going to warn you right now, if you do go and watch that series on Amazon Prime, those images will flash up when you least expect it. So just be prepared. So anyway, the doctors start thinking about what the hell they're going to do. And there's pretty much only two options. The doctors either close up the wound, leaving John with no penis, or they find the penis and hopefully reattach it. So the police are called in, they are informed about the situation, and dozens of officers are sent out on a manhunt for John's missing penis. Okay, so at this point, about an hour had passed since the incident. John is in the hospital, and Lorena, she had obviously driven to work. Well, now she's left work, and she has driven to her boss's house, who was a woman called Jana, to ask her for advice. And Jana said that she should hand herself in to the police. Come clean about what she had done. Come clean about all of the abuse. Tell the truth. So it's around 4 a.m. when Lorena arrives at the police station. She's taken straight into an interview room, but the police are not really interested right now in her story, what has happened to her. All they are interested in is, where is the penis? Because time is literally of the essence. So they're basically like, yeah, we'll get to your story after, just tell us where the penis is. But Lorena is having trouble remembering where she threw the penis. However, eventually she starts remembering where she possibly threw it. So the police head straight over to the field where Lorena thinks she threw the penis. And it's crazy to even imagine all of these police officers probably with their sirens on, heading to this field to try and find a severed penis. You really can't make this stuff up. And this field, it's very long grass. I'm talking grass up to your knees. I don't know how they're going to find this penis. It is literally like trying to find a penis in a haystack. And at around 6 a.m., so they've been searching for a while, one of the officers stands on something squishy. One of the officers stood on the penis. It's like, what are the chances? What are the bloody chances? So then they've obviously now found the penis, which I am completely shocked that they've even found it. And all of these officers are gathered around this penis, just staring at it because none of them want to touch it. All of these officers are freaked out by this penis. And I get it. Okay, I get it. I'm freaked out by this penis as well. But these are police officers. They deal with crime scenes all the time. I am sure they've seen some crazy stuff. They were just really freaked out. So they had to wait for a crime scene technician to arrive, who came with big, huge gloves on. And they came out as if they were literally having to pick up a leg or something. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous. Now that they have this penis, they think, okay, we need to preserve it. It's just so weird, all of this. I can't believe all of this stuff is leaving my mouth. So all of these officers head over to a nearby 7-Eleven to ask for a hot dog box filled with ice so they can put the penis on ice to preserve it, to hopefully reattach it. That is a sentence I never thought I would say. And they rush this penis to the hospital. John is prepped for surgery, and this is approximately 3 to 4 hours after the dismemberment. Now, I am no medical professional, but that seems like a very long time. How was it in a condition that it was even possible to try and reattach it? John is prepped for surgery, and this surgery lasted for 9 hours, but in the end, carefully reattaching the tiniest little microscopic blood vessels and all stuff like that, and you know, I don't know what I'm talking about. They managed to reattach the penis. I can't believe it. How? I'm telling you, doctors are miracle workers. So anyway, John and his penis are reunited. So now we get back to Lorena at the police station. And now that the penis has been reattached, they are more interested in her story and what she actually has to say. So Lorena tells her story. She tells them what has happened to her, that she was raped on that night, and she cut off his penis in response to being raped. Now, John did deny raping Lorena on this night. He actually said that the two of them categorically did not have sex that night. However, Lorena went to the hospital for an examination, and it was confirmed that John had ejaculated inside of her recently. So at this point, John suddenly changes his story. John suddenly says, oh, maybe we did have sex then, but I probably did it in my sleep. Yeah, I slept walked and had sex with my wife. Consensually though. Really, who the hell are you trying to kid? However, John was charged with marital sexual assault, which carried a sentence of 20 years in prison. And Lorena was not about to get off on what she did either. And she was charged with malicious wounding, which also carried a 20-year prison sentence. So they have both both been charged with what they have done to each other, and now they are both going to trial in separate trials. So a few months go by, and let me just tell you, this went absolutely crazy in the media. This was on the scale of like the OJ Simpson trial. Maybe not that big, but it was still on that kind of scale.
Is he a drunk, a brute, a batterer who forced sex on a young and fearful wife? Or is she a calculating, jealous woman enraged over unsatisfying sex?
But yeah, the media went crazy with this, and I can understand why, because it's definitely a shocking story. You don't really hear about a penis being cut off that often, do you? How many times have I said penis in this video? Like, seriously. But were the media taking it seriously at all? No, of course they weren't, because aside from all of the manhood jokes and the dick getting cut off, blah, 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 behind all of that, this case involves serious domestic abuse. But no one seemed to want to talk about that. The media were just treating this whole thing as a big joke, saying things like, oh, watch out for those crazy women out there. They're going to cut all your penises off. Men everywhere, all around the world, cross your legs because you never know what would happen. Are you treating your wife at home good enough? If you're not, maybe she's going to cut your penis off. It was all about, oh, watch out for those crazy wives. It wasn't stop raping women. That was not the story, no. This case was even making it into stand-up comedy. It was crazy.
Someone finally evened up the odds. You know what I mean? It's like, well, men don't know what to do.
Everyone wanted a piece of John and Lorena. They both literally did become mini celebrities. Everyone wanted to interview them. John was going on radio and TV shows left, right, and center. He was going on as much as he possibly could. Lorena even did an interview and a photo shoot for Vanity Fair. Friends and family of both of them were also paid to speak in interviews and everything. It really was crazy. And this story really did turn into the battle of the sexes. Men were arguing that this was the worst thing ever in the world, and Lorena is crazy and she should go to prison for the rest of her life. Not all men were saying that, by the way, but the media was definitely making out that all men were thinking that. And then on the flip side, women were celebrating Lorena like a feminist icon, saying that finally a woman has fought back. Again, not all women thought like that, but you know what I mean? And remember Todd? Todd was the cousin of John and who went to live with them at the very beginning of their marriage and caused so many problems. Well, Todd went on a talk show and said that if he was still living with them when Lorena did what she did, he would kill her.
Reaction when you found out what happened to your brother?
If I'd have seen her, I would have killed her.
Did you...
And he also said that Lorena took away, quote, the most important thing in a man's life.
She did worse than kill him. She took away the thing that means most to a man.
But there are many things that are more important in a person's life than a penis. Not your family, maybe, not your heart, your eyesight even. Your brain? No, no, no. No, no, no. The penis reigns superior. I know I'm being very sarcastic right now, but it's just like some people drive me up the wall. But anyway, we now get to November of 1993. This is 5 months after the incident. It's now John's trial. And once again, there was a huge media frenzy. Literally the whole country was following along this case, and outside of the courtroom, t-shirts with crude jokes were being sold and even penis-shaped cookies. However, despite the frenzy, it was decided that cameras were not allowed in the courtroom. And it was because this was a sex crime. John was being charged with sexual assault. So the trial starts and immediately Lorena is at a disadvantage. And that is because marital rape was not taken seriously at all. In 1993, it had only just started to become illegal in most states. It is crazy when you think about that marital rape, it didn't exist. Before the 90s, the notion was you couldn't rape your wife. A husband cannot rape his wife, which is beyond crazy. I cannot believe that we lived in a world where that was the case. But even still, in 1993, even though it was technically a crime, marital rape was still not seen as seriously as any other rape. Marital rape is much harder to prosecute, stupidly, but the thought is, How do you prove that a husband raped his wife? How do you prove that it was forced? But Lorena also had another disadvantage in this trial because it was ruled that Lorena could only testify about being raped in the 5 days leading up to the incident. Anything older than 5 days before the penis chopping, anything older than that was inadmissible. So Lorena couldn't testify about the years of abuse that she had suffered. She was literally only allowed to talk about the 5 days prior to the incident, which again seems completely unfair. And it's just like, why? And the answer to this, not that it's right, but the answer to this is because John was only being charged with one rape. And that was the rape on the night of the incident, the penis dismemberment. Because he wasn't being charged with multiple rapes, they couldn't be brought in. So anyway, Lorena took the stand and she tried her best to get her story across, but she was so limited on what she could say. And the whole time that she was on the stand as well, she actually had to face John. And John was staring her down and intimidating her. And she was incredibly nervous. She was definitely stumbling over her words. She was very quiet. And she just wasn't able to get her story across the way she would have wanted to. And when it came to John's defense, they tried to say that Lorena was just bitter, that she was a jealous, crazy woman, and that she had cut off John's penis because she was unsatisfied in their sex life because she never had an orgasm. They also said that she cut off his penis because she was worried that he would run off with another woman. She didn't actually need to be worried about that because he did that on a regular basis. But not only that, and this next thing infuriates the hell out of me, Lorena's rape examination was used against her. So remember that she underwent an examination and that confirmed that John had ejaculated in her recently. Well, the doctor that carried out that examination took the stand and actually said that Lorena was way too calm in that examination for someone that had just been raped. Who the hell gives them the right to say how a person should act, how they should be after they are raped? Also in the examination, the doctor said that Lorena showed no signs of significant damage, basically insinuating because she didn't have so much damage to her vagina that she couldn't have been raped. And I'm just like, are you being serious? Rape doesn't always look the same. You can't just put things into neat little boxes like that. So anyway, John took the stand and he completely denied raping his wife. He said that they had only had consensual sex throughout their whole relationship, and he had never been abusive, and he had never been violent, and he had never laid a finger on her. And when it came to the jury having to deliberate, ultimately they agreed with John and he was found not guilty. So a couple more months pass and we are now in January of 1994, and it is now Lorena's trial, and the media frenzy had not calmed down. If anything, it had gotten worse because Lorena's trial was going to be televised. Because in the 2 months between John's trial and Lorena's trial, John had basically been going on a publicity tour. He basically went on a tour of, oh, please feel sorry for me. I am the victim in all of this. And he wanted people to feel sorry for him because he couldn't pay his medical bills. And unbelievably, there were TV fundraisers to help raise money for John, the serial rapist. He went on the Howard Stern show on New Year's Eve. They encouraged people to phone in to donate to John. John even sold his own merchandise to raise money. John even went on to a radio show, and this radio host, I think it was the radio host anyway, the radio host said, why would he rape Lorena anyway? She's not that good looking. I cannot even tell you how many times I have gotten so angry researching this case, but that was one of the times. So now it actually is Lorena's trial, and her trial was going to be televised. Does not make sense to me. The two cases were treated completely different. They didn't want John's trial to be televised because it was a sex crime, and Lorena Raina, even though she has been charged with malicious wounding, it's still technically a sex crime because she cut off a penis. In my eyes, anyway, it falls under a sex crime. But, you know, it's very clear that Lorena and John are not being treated equally. So Lorena had to now face the pressure of giving evidence in front of cameras, in front of the whole world. And a lot of the world were tuning into this trial. And she could have pleaded guilty to avoid a trial, but Lorena wasn't going to do that. In her eyes, she wasn't guilty. So she submitted a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity. And Lorena took the stand. And this time it was completely different because Lorena wasn't restricted to only testifying about the 5 days prior to the incident. For the first time ever, Lorena was able to give her full story. And I've seen some of this trial and she is visibly traumatized. You can see it in her body language, in her facial expressions.
He would put his hands around my neck and he would chuck my this part of my neck. He will put his two thumbs pushing me very down low.
And it actually does break your heart. You can see how much pain she is in. But she also came across as very genuine, something that John never came across as. But it wasn't just Lorena that spoke. Around 50 witnesses came forward to testify about the abuse, which included her colleagues, neighbors, friends. Even John's friends came forward to testify about the abuse they saw and heard. And all of these witnesses corroborated Lorena's story. However, it wasn't just the abuse that needed to be proven. They also needed to prove that Lorena was temporarily insane at the time of the act, which is so hard to prove. So anyway, John took the stand and he was very nonchalant on the stand, you know, acting the cool guy. He was very, very arrogant. And he also flat out lied on the stand, which he did multiple times, so he doesn't really care about that. However, under cross-examination, he was caught out in many of his lies, which definitely ruined his credibility.
I didn't plead guilty to it. I just said, no, I denied what she stated in this here, so, what they said in here. I do nothing. I didn't hit my wife or anything. She just, you know, they just said
that. A psychiatrist also testified that Lorena did actually have a break of reality at the time of the offense, that she genuinely wasn't sane of mind when she committed the offense, and that due to the years of abuse and sexual abuse, she just snapped, and she 100% met the requirements for the defense of insanity. And even though the media had tried to paint Lorena as this crazy woman, they kept calling her a hot blooded Latina, and it was just like, shut up, that they were just labeling her as this crazy woman when she has been through years of abuse. But even with the media frenzy, the jury agreed with Lorena, and she was found not guilty by reason of insanity, which meant that she wasn't going to go to prison. However, because she was found not guilty by reason of insanity, this meant that she would be required to have a short stay at a psychiatric hospital for treatment. So after all of this, both John and Lorena, neither one of them faced any prison time for what they have done, which is so crazy, isn't it? What case have I ever covered where nobody has gone to prison? And you may be thinking, so the story's over. Okay, they both never went to prison. But it's nearly over, but not quite. Because we now need to talk about what happened to John and Lorena after the trial. And they both went down completely different paths, which is very telling about their character, okay? We're going to start with Lorena. She obviously went to the psychiatric hospital. She received treatment. She was there for 5 weeks before being released. And oh my God, there was an interview of Lorena when she came out of the psychiatric hospital, and she was a completely different woman. She looked happy. She was so confident. She wasn't nervous at all. She had the biggest smile on her face, and she just looked like she had a weight lifted from her. And the courts were confident that she wouldn't reoffend, and she was given completely unconditional release. So she was free, completely free. Lorena then tried to just get her life back, her normal quiet life, because that is all that she ever wanted. She went back to work at the nail salon, and she just tried to keep her head down and rebuild herself and rebuild her life. However, John, he didn't want to keep his head down. No, no, no. He saw this this as a chance to get famous, to use this to get money. So he carried on his publicity tour. He went on more talk shows, radio shows. He went on everything that he could. He made guest appearances at nightclubs. He was doing signed autographs and selling them. He even sold his own merchandise again. One piece of the merchandise that he was selling was steak knives. He also formed a band that he called The Severed Parts, when he should have actually called the band The Dicks. He then also found new fame as he starred in porn films. He had his very own porn movie, which was called John Wayne Bobbitt Uncut, and his severed off penis was actually at the start of the movie. And this first porn movie that he did really gave him the attention that he wanted, because everyone wanted to see this, because everyone wanted to see what his penis looked like. And it completely inflated his ego, because it did unfortunately do quite well. He actually had this box office screening of the porn movie. So because he gained new fame, he wanted to star in a second porn movie. But before he did, he wanted to undergo penis enlargement surgery. You heard that right. So after completely losing his penis once, he wanted to undergo an incredibly risky surgery just to get a bigger penis. And in the end, the surgery went horribly wrong. John was left with what has been called a completely deformed penis. However, he still went on to star in a second porn movie, which was called Frankenpenis. Can you tell that I'm really just fed up with this man? Okay, but we've still got more to cover with John. Because in the years that passed, John entered into a number of relationships, and in every relationship that he entered, John was abusive. This was not a one-time thing with Lorena. John abused pretty much every single woman that he's ever been in a relationship with. He was arrested twice for abusing his first partner, Christina, when she was found with bruises all over her arms and her head. He then got married to another woman called Joanna. And just 2 months into the marriage, John was arrested for driving his knee into her lower back and breaking her tailbone. He was also a year later arrested on battery charges of his 14-year-old stepson. And finally, the worst that we know of, because I'm sure there's probably other things that are very similar to this, but the worst that we know of is that John entered into a relationship with a woman called Desiree. And Desiree was in a very similar situation to Lorena. They were in a very hostile, volatile relationship. They would argue all the time. And whenever Desiree would anger him, John would beat her viciously with his fists, with weapons, with anything that he could get his hands on. He also again threatened to kill Desiree if she ever left him. He also dangled Desiree off a balcony and threatened to drop her, which is exactly what he did to Lorena. And then this next thing I cannot believe, but there was one time where he tied her to a bed, raped her, sodomized her, and tortured her for 3 days. Desiree was tied to a bed for 3 days. I cannot believe this. What the actual hell. Desiree had to play dead to get out of this situation. So Desiree played dead, and John genuinely believed that she was dead. So he started gathering bed sheets to wrap her body in to dispose of her. Now, thankfully, Desiree, after she was untied, she managed to figure out what was going on, and she managed to get out of there and escape. But oh my God, John is literally okay with murdering somebody and then disposing of their body like it's nothing. And Desiree was too scared to press charges because, hello, John is very scary. He has threatened to kill her. And he also thought that he probably had killed her. So I don't blame her for being scared. But because she never pressed charges, John got away with everything. And over the years, John was arrested over and over and over again on various domestic violence charges. His rap sheet is ridiculously long. He was being arrested multiple times a year, and he only spent minimal time behind bars. However, it was during one of these very short prison sentences that the other prisoners, they knew who John was. They knew what he had done. He became a target, and he ended up being sexually assaulted and raped by a large group of other prisoners. And it was after this incident that John seemed to have an epiphany. And this is when he worked with an author to write the book that I've been telling you about. And in this book, John does not hold back. He goes into excruciating detail. It is disturbing and disgusting what he has done to Lorena and just what he has done. He's vile. I actually can't believe how honest he was in that book. And John signed off on the book. He said that everything in that book was true. John also said that it was the best book that he'd ever read. But then John's girlfriend at the time read the book and she was like, no way. John, you cannot let them publish this book because it paints you out to be a serial rapist. Which, I'm sorry to break it to you, he is. So in the end, John decided he wanted to back out of the book, but it was too late. So he started sending death threats to the author, telling him not to publish, but the author completely ignored him and published it anyway. And John continues to this day to deny everything, really. However, for some reason, even though this book has been published, it's out there, no one really seems to talk about it. The full truth of what happened in the case of Lorena and John Bobbitt, it doesn't really seem to get out there. People only want to focus on the penis cutting. And I will leave a link to the book in the description box down below if you wanted to check it out, but I will give you a warning. It is disturbing and he does go into a lot of detail about the sexual assaults that happened to him, but also what he did to Lorena. And finally, I want to end this video talking about Lorena, because like I said, she was keeping her head down. She didn't want fame. She didn't want attention. She just wanted to rebuild her life. And I'm very, very happy to tell you that that is exactly what she did. She worked incredibly hard to get herself back to where she wanted to be. She went back to college to get some more education. And over the years, John hassled her and stalked her. He sent her multiple letters. He would turn up outside of her work. He would beg her to take him back. He would say things like, he's still in love with her, she's the best woman he's ever had. If he pictures the perfect woman in his head, it would be Lorena. And thankfully, Lorena just ignored him. And instead, she has decided to dedicate her life in helping victims of domestic violence. She has volunteered at homeless shelters. She has raised money for victims of domestic abuse. She has even set up her own non-profit foundation, which is aimed at helping victims of domestic violence. And Lorena has also gone on TV to do interviews, etc., because she has realized that she can use her fame for good. She can use her voice to shine a light on matters like domestic violence, on abuse, on rape. And it's just amazing what she has done, given what she went through. And finally, Lorena went on to meet a man called Dave Ballinger. They got married. They went on to have a daughter who is now a teenager. And Lorena, who is now in her 50s, has dedicated her life to her foundation. She coaches her daughter's basketball team, and she is finally with a good man. She has a good family, and she finally has that American dream that she always wanted. And I really do just hope that Lorena is doing well. I am so sorry for everything that she went through. And I want to make it clear, I do not condone acts of violence, which is what she committed, but I think it's very clear to everyone that she was just reacting to the years of abuse that she suffered. Lorena is a good person that was driven to do a bad thing. She was driven to do the extreme. And I do genuinely believe that in that moment, she did snap and she wasn't in control of her body, of her mind. And as for John, well, I think he is completely different. I think John is a dick. And to think about all of the women that John abused and raped after Lorena and after his penis got reattached, both the ones that we know about and also the ones that we don't, because I guarantee you there's more. It kind of makes you wish that they never reattached his penis at all. And that brings us to the end of the episode on John and Lorena Bobbitt. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening today. Subscribe or follow to make sure you never miss an episode of The Criminal Makeup. And if you enjoy the show, it would really mean a lot if you could leave a 5-star review. In the meantime, if you have been affected by any of the themes in this episode, please take the time to look at the description for this episode for some helpful resources. Special thanks to my producers at Audio Boom Studios, and I'll see you all in the next one.